God, there are so many podcasts to listen to. I'm having like one of those Netflix indecision moments. What do you think I should listen to?
Oh, you definitely need to listen to nerdfunnel.com.
But where does he listen to that?
Nerdfunnel.com, or hit us up on any of our social media channels. I mean, hit it up on youtube.com/nerdfunnel. And honestly,
could I find you on facebook.com/nerdfunnel?
Any.com/nerdfunnel, you'll probably fucking find us. Or at nerdfunnel if you're like a Twitter or Instagram dude.
Okay.
And it's so much fun at fucking nerdfunnel.com. You will find articles and podcasts and all sorts of stuff that will funnel right into your more than willing ear holes and honestly, your eye holes at this point.
Awesome, because I got really tired of scrolling through all these podcasts.
Well, I'm not just going to go onto youtube.com/nerdfunnel and just have something funnel into my eye hole, am I?
What's wrong with getting something shoved into your eye hole? There's plenty of Japanese girls who are really into it.
You guys, I just went to nerdfunnel.com and I liked what was going in my eye hole. Oh, I think I'm going to check out what's going to go in my ear hole.
So sexy. So sexy.
Weird, isn't it? Am
no.
I? Am I?
Well, let's go ahead and find out what's coming in my ear hole right now. Hey, guys, you know that that Darth Vader is Luke's father?
Whoa, spoiler alert!
Yeah. Did you know that the human head weighs 8 pounds?
Spoilers!
Did you know that Snape kills Dumbledore?
Ah!
Did you know that if you listen to our cast, you might get something spoiled? Just a warning. Wanted to give you a heads up. So, Steven, I know your head just exploded. I'm sorry.
Do you want spoilers? You will.
Hey everyone, we're back. You're listening to Nerd Funnel, where we take all the nerd news of the world and funnel it into your more than willing ear holes. I'm Bob Shway, and with me tonight is Steven. And Ivan.
I picked the man who comes to this school looking for trouble.
That was supposed to be as Patrick Stewart.
That was a pretty strong Patrick Stewart.
That was pretty good. That was pretty good. And
you're drunk.
Our special guest tonight, we have with us Keith. What's up, Keith?
Hey, it's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
We all went to go see X-Men Apocalypse.
And I sat next to Keith, and I didn't even know.
So yeah, there was a miscommunication on me and Keith's part of whether or not he was going to be coming to the show. And anyway, long story short, we sat next to him in the movie, didn't know he was there.
See? Fate turned out. I still was with you guys, kind of, seeing the movie.
Yeah, so anyway.
It was a twist of fate.
So we got to see it, and so that will be tonight's topic of conversation as we get into the X-Men Apocalypse movie. Now, I'm going to go ahead and say, first of all, that I am utterly shocked that when I finished watching this movie, I turned to Steven, fully expecting him to say, that was terrible.
This is shit.
Because I enjoyed it, and I liked it, and he had a smile on his face, and he's like, that was great.
I want to hear like verbatim what you said.
My first reaction was just like, that was a great movie. It was simple.
Yeah.
It wasn't overly complex for the sake of being complex.
Is this a Nerd Funnel first?
Where we're all on the accordance.
Was just like, yeah, was good.
You know what's going to be funny? Fong comes back next week after seeing it, and she hates
it.
Yeah. Well, the only person I can think of who doesn't like it so far is Kamiya, but she's not on the cast, so she
We keep telling her to come back on, but she doesn't want to come back on.
So that opinion doesn't matter.
She'll rant on the Facebook all day. You know what? You know, listeners, go on Facebook on our Facebook page and tell Kamiya.
Facebook.com/nerdfunnel.
Nerdfunnel. And tell Kamiya how much you like X-Men Apocalypse.
And, honestly, like, her opinions are kind of bad because she likes Fallout 4. She likes all this shit that's fucking terrible.
Hey, Fallout 4 is not bad. It's a bad Fallout game, but it's not a good bad game.
It's a bad game.
I think you just got disinvited.
Yeah, disinvited again.
It's a pretty terrible game.
I enjoyed it for the most part.
It's post-apocalyptic walking simulator.
Okay, yeah. It was a bit too much like Skyrim. I really feel BioWare kind of, like, went a little bit overboard Bethesda. With the title. Oh, yeah. Okay, Bethesda. Yeah, that's true.
Mars also saw it with us last night. Couldn't be here today. But he didn't hate it, didn't like it.
He said he liked
it. He liked it. He wasn't like super enthusiastic.
He liked Civil War better than
so
this.
Are we all in agreement that this was better than Civil War yes. and Batman vs. Superman?
It was better.
I like this better
I
than Civil War.
I enjoyed this movie. It was a good movie.
But how would you rank it in
how would you
terms
rank
of
it?
Like in
this
the,
year's comic
because
book?
Because once Kamiya went on off with that rant, we all started ranking stuff.
Right.
So I had mine at X-Men Apocalypse number one, then Civil War, then Batman, then Deadpool.
No.
I thought
it was Deadpool, then Batman versus
I'd even rank Deadpool above Civil War. To be honest,
you think so?
Like thinking back on
well,
it,
well, it's kind of hard with Deadpool because it's so much of a different movie.
It's different. Yeah.
It's so much of a different movie.
I would actually have a Civil War on the bottom, just because.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't really enjoy it. It's like, yeah, in the original comic, there was an okay reason for this. For this one, it's like, hey, we just need an action movie where everyone beats the shit out of each other
and everyone shows up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, okay, let's go into X-Men Apocalypse. So I went on this gigantic Facebook rant, and actually with unintentionally just going into this long paragraphs and actually kind of elucidated my thoughts rather well, I think, and kind of got what I wanted to say kind of clarified.
Back pat, Bobby.
Yay, I did a thing that was organized. So what I wanted to say, first of all, was that what Steven always points out, that he likes things simple. Like, and we were talking about this with Civil War, but one of the fallacies of Civil War was that it got too convoluted and too wrapped up in its own plot and its own characters.
It got its head too far up its own ass.
Yeah, this X-Men Apocalypse, very simple drive, very simple plot.
Yeah, B, C.
Yep.
Like, that's all we need.
Even with all those characters, it didn't get sidetracked.
It didn't feel overwhelming, and I think everybody got their moment.
Yeah. And it all serviced the plot. Like in
everybody needed to be there. Yeah. That was the thing that Civil War didn't have, was that there were characters that didn't need to be there. Like Black Panther didn't need to
even
be there.
Spider-Man
yeah. didn't
Spider-Man,
need to be
Ant-Man.
There. Ant-Man didn't need to be there. Scarlet Witch didn't need to be there.
It was funny to have them in there, but they weren't like they didn't play a role, a means to an end to service the message and the plot of the film.
Right. And overall, all they did was end up taking away screen time from stuff that could have developed the plot
yes.
much better.
That could have
right.
been more time Absolutely. Making it interesting for Tony and Cap.
Uh-huh.
Actually, I agree. Like with Civil War, it just felt like a marketing ploy. Like how many people can we get in here so we can have that much more material when we're actually selling figurines and stuff.
Yeah.
With X-Men Apocalypse, like, okay, we got a story. Let's actually have a concise story. Let's not have anything too superfluous.
Let's have all yeah. the players have a use.
Exactly.
And I was deathly afraid it was going to fall into that third act syndrome. And they actually, Bryan Singer made fun of his own third act.
Yeah,
yeah right.
X-Men
amazing.
The Last Stand. They come out of the movie. So this whole movie is set in the 1980s. 1983, actually, which is the same year Return of the Jedi came out. And Jean and Scott and Nightcrawler all come out of Return of the Jedi. And she's like, oh, everybody knows the third one's always the worst. So kind of like a meta critique, like, okay, well, yeah, I admit that X-Men Last Stand was bad. But
look, that wasn't him. That was Brett Ratner.
That was Brett Ratner. But then look what I've done with this one. It didn't
right,
happen.
The third one was actually probably the best.
The best,
of,
yeah.
Between First Class, Days of Future Past, and Apocalypse. I think Apocalypse was the best out of all of them.
Here's my question. Out of Dave's... Really?
I think it was a better movie than Days of Future Past.
And First Class?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Sorry, we'll come back to that. But here's a question to you guys. In terms of Civil War, do you think that is the X-Men Last Stand moment of Marvel? Or do you think we could hit new lows?
It didn't go into like the ridiculous and... the ridiculous factor that X-Men
it did
3D?
Kind of. There was some ridiculous, like the entire resolution of that movie is
of which one
of Civil War?
Yeah,
was oh
what resolution?
Yeah,
there was no resolution.
Well, the point was that
nothing was resolved.
He essentially leaves him a voicemail of like, okay, we are seeing opposite sides, but we're cool.
Well,
and then Tony Stark goes,
that's like
we're cool.
That's
we're
on, like we're, leaving your ex-girlfriend
yeah.
a voicemail like, listen,
we're
different.
Break.
We should see other people. This is kind of weird.
They pulled a Ross and Rachel. They're on a break.
Right.
If you ever want to fuck, I'll be there.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's
exactly.
A great example of what happened.
That is exactly what happened.
And
good call.
It's just, and it's a bullshit. It's bullshit. Like, yeah. That was the biggest problem with.
Well, and there was no real concentration for the villain, which is why, I mean, Zemo was a catalyst to bring them together to be in conflict, but since they're both good guys, there was never going to be an actual villain being destroyed. Zemo was not a real, I didn't see him as a villain.
Zemo's plot didn't
in
make
Apocalypse,
sense. Hashtag Zemo's plot didn't make sense.
Yeah, but Apocalypse had.
Hashtag Zemo matters.
Zemo matters. Zemo's life matters. Apocalypse had a very, like, first of all, awesome job to Oscar Isaacs for pulling through a very charismatic performance through all that makeup.
He was oozing charisma. I loved him.
Yeah, I loved every minute he was on.
Even
scene,
through like, all that makeup, and like, they could have totally CGI'd him up and done and made him just inaccessible and robotic, but
he was good.
He actually had a little bit of an arc because
he fucking hammed it up. No, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I mean, a lot of people see villains as like one dimension. Like, okay, I'm evil and I want to take over the world and I want to rule it because I'm evil, right? But he was like, okay,
I have a vision.
I have a vision. Like, you are godless and you have replaced your
gods with these false
idols. And I'm going to be that. And then he changes once he sees Charles's power. He's like, no, I'm not just going to rule you. I'm going to be you. The only way to bring true peace and harmony. And he's totally convinced this is right. And you actually end up like, wow, that actually logically makes sense. Like, the only way to end the conflict is to be everybody.
Good villain logic.
Yeah, good villain logic.
His motivation was great. He had a fantastic, like, dark messiah complex.
Yeah, yep. It was great. I mean, and of course, he had the power to back it up, totally convinced of his own superiority. And I liked how, even though he was, like, the Apocalypse, like, the one power he didn't have was the one thing Charles had. Hashtag,
and the Phoenix power.
Hashtag Tron Cerebro. The Cerebro helmet was a total Tron helmet. Did you guys get that vibe?
No.
It was an eighties throwback. The Cerebro helmet.
I didn't
helmet?
Get that at all.
The Cerebro
it
helmet
lights up in the right.
It
places,
lights up
though.
Like a Tron
yeah,
helmet.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was.
Yeah, I can see that a little bit.
I kind of liked the part where this is probably not a direct pull, but they were just like Charles. That just reminded me of the fucking, like, the Juggernaut cartoon.
Oh, the X-Men cartoon?
No, the X-Men, like, the parody, the Juggernaut parody.
I didn't see
I'm
that.
I'm the Juggernaut,
oh,
bitch.
I'm a Juggernaut, bitch.
No? Get out of my head, Charles!
Oh,
Charles!
Yeah.
Get out of my head!
Sorry?
No, just me?
I'm not getting that. Poll.
And we just found out who the nerd of the group is.
Oh.
Or who the drunkest
is it
of the group
from the is. Is it the well. Juggernaut from the cartoon or from the X-Men 3?
No. From...
Vinnie Jones.
No. From fucking the internet.
Didn't see that.
They pulled that line from the internet in X-Men 3. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Okay, gotcha.
That was in X-Men 3.
Yeah, I know. They pulled that from the internet thing.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
In X-Men 3?
Yeah.
Oh.
Really?
That was totally a pull.
Wow.
Because it was so big. Because they're like, Charles, get out of my mind, Charles. I'm the Juggernaut, bitch.
Oh, man. I didn't know that.
You didn't know that?
No.
I'm so uncultured now.
I know,
How
right?
How dare you?
Dude.
How dare you? You call yourselves pop culture masters?
Hashtag nerd dashed.
Spend so much time on the internet. Apparently, it's all going to waste.
Hashtag nerd edumacated.
So plot. Let's talk plot. So... The Apocalypse wants to rise and take over the world and change it so he is everybody. Then we have the classic Xavier versus Magneto, you know, Xavier believing in the good of human beings.
The Malcolm X versus Martin Luther King.
And then Magneto having, yet again, I felt so bad for Magneto. Again, his family crushed. Again. I thought it was a really good way to bring him back onto the bad side of things.
I feel like Michael Fassbender had some of the best moments.
Well, he was trying
in that movie.
He was trying so hard to like not be Magneto. Like he was really trying. Like I'm gonna restart. I'm trying to lead an honest life, get a wife, get a kid, work an honest job, and it still followed him. And he tried.
By the way, that moment where he saves the guy, that somehow it struck something in my head where I was thinking about Man of Steel at that moment.
Yeah.
Where. When Kevin Costner is talking to Clark about like, well, maybe you should let them die.
Yeah.
Like
he doesn't let them.
Maybe you can't save them. Maybe you shouldn't save them all.
And that moment is his reflex. His first instinct is to save. And that's who he really is. And that's what Charles taps into at the end.
Yeah.
And it's that the anger that arises from because of his powers, because of other people's fear, not his own, is why he reacts, you know, so murderously in the end. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this may be an unpopular opinion, but I actually was almost mildly irritated by that character trope. Just because the victim of your circumstances again and again, for me, always gets a little bit old. I mean, yeah, he did a great job acting.
Mm-hmm.
I felt something when he went for that. I actually felt pity.
Yeah.
But it's like, from an analytical standpoint, looking, it's like, this again. I understand, but it feels like low-hanging fruit to constantly use. Oh, it's just everyone around him just doesn't give him the chance.
But you got to think of the kind of people that were around him too. Like, so he was working, was it like Poland, about Eastern Bloc factory workers that may not, you know, have
the experience to understand
or empathize. I can understand how,
I think it's like in any culture, like nobody, you don't understand someone until you walked in their shoes.
But I mean, how else would you react to somebody if you never saw something like that before? I mean, what other way is there to react?
I guess I can't say
it's
this.
It's kind of hard.
From a culture
that's
that...
super cool, dude. You can fucking move metal.
Actually, kind of, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, kind of that.
I would be terrified of that. I would be terrified.
I mean, yeah, I shit my pants, but my next reaction would be like, that's so cool.
No. Be like, wait, you're not going to kill me? Okay, yeah, cool. All right.
Listen, not everyone lives in Salem, Oregon, or wherever. Salem,
Massachusetts?
Yeah, Salem, Massachusetts.
Close. Salem, Oregon. You were only on the wrong side of the country.
I know. It's like... Later on, there's like fucking witch trials in fucking Oregon and people are burning Birkenstocks. I don't know where I was going with that.
Yeah, it's okay.
What about Xavier? So let's talk about him. I think Michael Fassbender did a little bit stronger performance, a little bit more.
Way stronger.
Yeah, I definitely like him.
I like McAvoy. I'm a fan of McAvoy.
I like McAvoy too, but he's bad. I think he didn't really have very many scenes to like shine in. Whereas I thought
he did when he's in Apocalypse's head towards the end.
I take that back. I like that. No,
yeah, that
right,
was pretty
right.
good.
He put in a good,
right.
like, that moment where he's like, oh, I'm in your head. I was like, oh, yeah, it's fucking on.
And then when it's just like, help me, Gene.
Yeah.
So good.
That was great.
And actually, I'm not Sophie Turner.
She's the girl from Game of Thrones.
Sansa.
Yeah.
Sansa. Yeah.
I actually thought that was a weak performance in her part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, actually,
she wasn't bad, though.
No, I don't think she was bad. But
I feel like I liked her performance more than I normally like it.
I actually thought she was better in Game of Thrones than this.
No, see, I don't dig her Game of Thrones performance as much.
Why? Because she's just like totally like helpless.
Not even helpless. Like she's just she's shitty. She's like
she's helpless and shitty. That's terrible. Yeah. That's a very good description of like the
Sansa's
past
character.
Five yeah. fucking seasons.
Like
of
she's just like such a bitch in Game of Thrones. Like she's
you're ruining everything.
Yeah, like she just cries and whines about everything, and she's like, I liked her performance here. Like I am not. If anybody listens to the cast, probably can tell. I'm not an overly emotional person.
I had no idea.
Yeah.
You're just crying.
I know, exactly.
What are these wetness
what are these,
from
these
my
things
eyes?
I got a little moved when she turns into the Phoenix and like bombs off and like...
Even though that was like totally on the nose. Where it's like, by the way, you're going to become the Phoenix.
It's fine though. Like,
ooh, what's she going to do later?
But that moment where she steps through and she finally believes in herself. Like, because you get through the entire movie that she's very unsure of herself. And she has like these terrible dreams.
She's afraid of it too.
She's afraid of her own power. And then finally she embraces it and she takes that. Like, I thought it was very cool visual storytelling where... She literally takes a leap of faith and
steps
into the air.
The fact that she's walking on air,
right.
that was kind of, that was a great shot
and
from a filmmaking perspective. Yeah. It was just like.
It's good visual storytelling. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden she unleashes her power and it's devastating and terrifying,
awesome.
But she's no longer scared of it. Like that was awesome.
And you know what I liked about it too? They didn't immediately just take her into like Dark Phoenix Saga.
Right.
Like it was.
No, she's going to play Phoenix.
Yeah, Phoenix. It was like, you know what it was? It was like a limit break. It didn't rule her. It was like, okay.
Ooh, that's actually a good
mode. Yeah, it was a limit break. It was
she
like.
Went over 9,000.
She went over 9,000. She went into overdrive mode. And it's not something she could do like every day. It's not like I can just go Phoenix like that. It's like takes. It took
she, like,
everything she had.
It was, plus, it was like Charles was goading her on.
Yeah, and it's not like the next day they could be like, okay, that was amazing. Let's see if we can do that again. Let's practice that. It's something that's like reserved and special and precious.
So my only complaint is that when she first entered like that mind battlefield, it's like I felt it was actually a bit too long of like a build up. It's like, okay.
I felt that dragged on a little bit.
Like, 30 seconds, they cut that like that much. Like, yeah. Okay, we got the tension. Now the tension's like feeling awkward. Like, what's going to... Let's do something.
Yeah, there was a little bit of a slow build up. But I mean that's a tiny little fault.
Yeah, it's a nitpick. But that's, I'll admit that.
That's nitpicky.
In comparison to like the setup fall in all the recent Marvel movies we're getting from like Ant-Man and shit, it's just like, "Oh, here's a conflict. Oh, here's a resolution. Oh, here's another conflict. Here's another resolution."
See, my expectations are so low when it comes to those movies that I'm typically kind of fine with it. Well, I don't expect much.
When it comes to this the setup in this movie where we get a little more, we get the conflict and the tension to breathe like this one has, and there were a lot of bad moments in this movie, might I add. There were a lot of
visually or like script wise.
Well, visually, script wise, and like what
I didn't have too many problems with the script.
But the best parts about this film
were Quicksilver.
Yes.
No. Yes. The best parts of this film outshine whole movies like Batman v Superman and fucking Civil War.
Yeah, because both those movies got lost in their own weighty philosophy, and this one,
just like the glut of plot, if you will.
Well, I mean, that's what I mean. It's like the plot and the message got so mixed together that it almost like it undermined the smooth ride that you're supposed to be taken on through the arc of the story. Like, it just got hung up.
Right.
This one got really just freaking... I mean, X-Men Apocalypse was just
ABC.
Very, yeah,
that was
very...
That was the brilliance of the storytelling.
And because of that, we allowed each character to kind of have a moment to breathe and develop themselves.
Right.
And
they all needed to...
Except for Jubilee.
Like you see...
Except for Jubilee.
And she didn't get to use her fireworks. But no, they all needed to be there, though. Like...
Hashtag sad yellow face.
Aw.
That Steven just gave to me.
Sad yellow jacket. She had the yellow...
I like that.
Can we talk about the 80s for a second
here? The aesthetic was
like,
right.
They had the jackets. They had the shirts.
She didn't have the pink sunglasses, though.
No. Ali Sheedy was the teacher. Did you catch the cameo? The Breakfast Club Ali Sheedy. she was the elementary school teacher for Scott when he was first...
Not elementary school. High school.
Or high school teacher when Scott was first...
Who's Ali Sheedy?
Ali Sheedy, she was in Breakfast Club. She's the
who did she play?
The loner.
Never seen.
Oh, okay, her.
Breakfast
she's
Club.
She's the frumpy one.
She was in Short Circuit with the robot Johnny Five.
Love that movie.
Come on,
Johnny Five is alive.
Oh, I have seen.
She's an '80s mainstay. She's a staple. Yeah. Oh my God, you guys!
And they put her back in.
Anyway, so it was nice. That was a nice throwback. A lot of '80s love there. They had the Return of the Jedi throwback. The styling for the clothing.
I like that they didn't really throw it out there.
Yeah, it was subtle. It was subtle.
Right. It was like you just noticed that like in the scene where Scott can finally see and he approaches Jean for the first time, like she's wearing a jacket with shoulder pads in it.
Yeah.
Like you just kind of notice these little things.
Yeah.
I mean, I kind of wish it hadn't because shoulder pads are awful. But it's good.
But
continuity.
It was a sign of the times.
Yeah, like I think that the amount of study they did was like not 80s in your face, but like, hey, by the way, it's the 80s.
Yeah.
And by the way, Sophie Turner's American accent was not bad at all.
No. I liked it. I was impressed.
I had to have it grow on me. For the first time, I was like, well, you sound odd because I'm so used to you like having
right,
not
but
that. But
I think that that's more of our take on it. Because I think if you didn't know she was British, you might not be able to tell. Like, you might just think she's an American actress.
Like, the nice thing about this particular American accent is how non-unique it was, I suppose.
Like, oh, yeah, I'm from the U.S., somewhere.
Yeah.
Right. Vaguely just American.
Vaguely Midwestern.
Vaguely red, white, and blue. Somewhere.
What do you think about Mystique?
Y'all white people sound alike.
What do you think about Mystique kind of taking up the mantle of Cyclops' leadership role to begin with? Like, towards the end of the film? Like, she's the kind of the director.
Yeah, I'm not... I have a problem with Mystique being a good guy in general.
Cyclops is the one that's going to become the leader. But Mystique is kind of like, well, she started out bad, but then she's like rescuing mutants. Like, she rescues Nightcrawler. By the way,
Freedom Fighter.
Nightcrawler was awesome. I liked it. No, I mean, it's not Alan Cumming, but it was cool. Like, he functioned. Like, he just didn't have like one scene where he was like, in X-Men 2, that opening scene.
The White House scene.
With the White House scene, amazing. And Alan Cumming is an amazing actor, but he didn't get enough play in that movie.
I mean, he has the arc of, like, you have to believe in yourself, because in X2, where they're like, he has to teleport to through the door that he can't see through.
How awesome was the bamfing in this movie?
It was good. I liked it.
Yeah, I think that... I actually like the sound effect.
Good sound effect.
The visual effect of it a lot more.
I like the little cloud.
Yeah.
Like, he leaves the little cloud. Well, that was a nice comic book nod.
That's his calling card. His calling card. Okay, speaking of visual effects, can we just talk about Quicksilver? Hands down, the best visual scene in the movie.
Yeah.
They actually, in the
sweet dream scene?
Yeah.
So good.
Sweet dreams.
I was laughing my ass off during that scene.
In the post credits roll, they had a little interview with the writer. And they talked about how Evan Peters, who plays Quicksilver, was on set more than any other person.
20 days
of filming straight to get that scene and all his scenes right, because it took so much logistical work to do. But it's super paid off.
Right, it was an awesome sequence.
It was amazing. Like, you think that the one from Days of Future Past was amazing, and this one just like...
Oh, he kills
it. Just
this.
Kills it.
I think it's about on keel. It's about the same.
I mean... It's a good scene.
Because it's like that whole thing kind of works out from like the Rube Goldberg type machine.
Right, right.
Like it has one thing has to lead to another. And I thought that they did it just as well as the last time. But it wasn't better.
This one is just more of that, though. If you like that scene, this is a bigger, more elaborate version of that.
Mm-hmm.
Do you guys think that Quicksilver is OP, though?
No.
Not necessarily. I mean
Apocalypse... he literally got stuck by... getting stuck in a puddle. Like,
Apocalypse negated
his power.
Well, then Apocalypse trapped him, managed to time out his steps, trapped him, then broke his legs.
See, up until that moment, I was like, he seems kind of OP, until he was defeated. Sorry, Keith.
Like his power seems pretty strong, but his tactical prowess is like
he needs
shit.
Training. Yeah, he just needs some training. That's all he needs.
That's fair.
One
of the main complaints I heard about this movie, though, is that it was just a rehash of the last one.
I don't think so.
And I think that people thought that was weak because they couldn't think of anything more interesting to do
with the Quicksilver sequence.
I thought this one actually brought like its own spark to it.
This was
a little bit more fun to me too than the last one. The last one had like a grave danger type thing where like you felt like I mean, people are shooting guns and stuff in the last one, and that feels kind of like something bad could happen.
Whereas the whole fucking mansion is exploding.
But it feels like there's not a lot of danger in that because. You know that Quicksilver is going to,
but this is an explosion, and he doesn't save everybody. Havoc dies,
right? And he doesn't get to everybody, and so, I mean, yeah, there's a weight to it, I guess, but like the whole scene as a felt more fun than the last one.
It was also, I think, it has a large part to do with the music choice too, because this is
comedic.
Yeah, it's a sweet.
He's also like saving fish and like saving the pizza dog.
Yeah.
The pizza dog named Tauntaun. The pizza dog.
How do you? What?
That was in the credits.
Really?
The credit dog's name is Tauntaun. I know. As
pizza
freaking,
dog played by Tauntaun.
Freaking hilarious. Let's talk about the horseman. So, Apocalypse needs his horseman. Recruits Storm, and Psylocke, and Angel, and of course Magneto.
Actually, I thought Angel's transformation scene was really
that was
really
pretty
cool.
Brutal.
Yeah,
like Apocalypse was just like, I'm just gonna rip your rib cages out and then bind metal to it and reform you, and that was just brutal.
The only thing I wish that they had done is I wish that they had brought Logan in and used him as one of the horses.
So
that happened in the comics.
Hashtag Logan cameo. They go to Alkali Lake with Stryker and they free him. Gene is able to give him back a portion of his memory and give him his name back. But he runs off. But it's just a quick cameo, Logan, by Hugh Jackman.
Yeah, he does his thing.
He does his mindless killer Wolverine thing.
But he has the Weapon X.
Yeah, the Weapon X helmet, which I love.
Yeah, that
was
pretty cool.
Oh, I actually know that.
It was a great cameo.
I actually thought that scene was a little bit awkward. Kind of felt like, hey, we need to plug in something here. So here's Wolverine for the next 10 minutes.
Just to get, because he's going to have one last hurrah as Wolverine before he retires. So
I thought it was kind of fun.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah, like
he was like a beast. Not like a beast.
From a story standpoint, he's like, okay, this feels
Deus Ex Machina. Yeah.
But like as a viewer, it's like, hey, yeah, it's Wolverine. That's cool.
I like a Hugh Jackman, so yeah. I'll watch that dude do anything.
Yeah.
If you can like justify Deus Ex Machina, like it works.
They needed a way out, and he was their way out. So they freed him. That was kind of cool. I liked it. Plus, Hugh Jackman with the shirt off. Come on, we were really complaining about this.
By the way,
there was never not a good opportunity for Hugh Jackman to go shirtless.
Yeah.
I just rewatched Days of Future Past right before we went to go see this. And he's a fucking huge in Days of Future Past.
He's ridiculously jacked. When he does his naked scene, just like it's amazing.
So vascular.
I was actually talking to somebody about this the other day. If you look at Hugh Jackman in 2000 X-Men, he's good looking guy with shirt off, you know, in shape, whatever. But he is a fucking 4 hour a day. Like, as a trainer, I know exactly what it takes to get a body like that. He's putting in 4 or 5 hours a day of training to look like that in Days of Future Past.
He was on the diet, too, where every 4 hours he had to wake up and eat like a chicken.
Yeah.
Like in the middle of the night, he would wake up to eat a chicken and then go back to
sleep. Ridiculous. Yeah. It's an amazing diet that you have to be on. As an amateur bodybuilder who's done competitions myself,
can't be that good for you either, though.
No, it's not a sustainable way of life. Yeah. You can't exist in that form all the time. But he doesn't. I mean,
he does it for
in this incarnation, like, I mean, he was still jacked in this one and big, but he wasn't like as ripped as Days of Future Past.
Yeah, Days of Future Past was insanely
big. Just nuts.
I still want him for Metal Gear Solid, Solid Snake.
Oh, hashtag, that would be bad, yeah.
Hugh Jackman, Solid Snake.
That'd be so hashtag Hugh Jackman, Solid Snake.
Like, I think
you wouldn't do Kiefer Sutherland?
No. Way more.
I could see Hugh Jackman.
Well, I mean, Kiefer was great in MGS5. As a voice.
I would say nothing about MGS5 is great. There was absolutely nothing about it.
Wouldn't be Nerd Funnel if we didn't get MGS5 and on an X-Men cast.
Right? Well, I mean,
Kojima invades all. He's the ultimate Dark Souls invader.
Kojima is fucking no. Kojima is Apocalypse. He is everything.
He is everyone.
He is the Alpha. He is the Omega. He's coming everywhere. Hideo Kojima.
Wolverine. I mean, it would have been nice to have Wolverine but it chronologically just didn't fit.
Oh yeah.
So I like the way they handle Wolverine.
And I like that, like, they had a little moment where she's the, like, Jean is the one who gives him his
he's going to come back and, like.
But she doesn't know that.
No.
Yeah.
So theoretically, in the chronology of it, is like, that's just what happened. And that's how he at least knew his name when he ran off.
Speaking of chronology.
Yeah.
There was a lot of things that I was like, okay, I had a lot of issues with this film, but I still like it better than Civil War. But. Like, for example, this is a small thing, kind of a big thing. Like, Magneto's pulling fucking metal from all over the world.
Uh-huh.
They're flying in a fucking metal plane.
Yeah.
And that was like, okay, so when are they going to get ripped out of the sky? Oh, they landed safely?
Yeah.
So
right.
But
here's the thing. Okay, so chronology-wise, we in this movie, it gets established that Professor X loses his hair. From this
semi-transformation.
Body, yes, semi-transformation from the spirit of Apocalypse into Professor.
He wants
X.
to transfer himself into Xavier to use his powers so he can be everybody.
Right,
and that process is disrupted, and in the process of disrupting it, he loses his hair.
Yeah, and like part of me is thinking throughout this entire movie, there has been like, well, how did. Would it have worked out that way anyways if that had never happened? Because I'm assuming from this like continuity, technically speaking, people would not have heard of Apocalypse. So, okay, part of the plot point is that people are looking for Apocalypse after Magneto reveals that there are mutants in the world. Whereas in the original continuity, mutants aren't as known until around the 2000s is when this takes place.
Right.
Okay. Yeah.
So there's a bunch of things that, like, happen in between. How did Storm become a part of Team X-Men? How did,
Well, she becomes a part by the end.
Because of Apocalypse. Well, I mean,
because of Apocalypse. But assuming that Apocalypse never happens in the original timeline, like, how does he lose his hair?
I mean, you can make the argument that because they skewed the timeline in Days of Future Past, we're essentially, like, Star Trek main
it's alternate
series versus
timeline.
Star Trek J.J. Abrams.
So, like, at the end of Days of Future Past, he's like, oh, the time has many streams or whatever. They made that kind of caveat. It's like, okay, well, now we have multiple timelines.
So, like,
going
theoretically,
on.
Then the idea would be that Days of Future Past somehow disrupted the timeline, that now people are going to be more aware, so now they hunt out Apocalypse, which they didn't do
actually,
in the original timeline.
Technically, Apocalypse, all Moira's fault.
Yeah, it's true.
Moira was the one who busted into that cave.
She let the sunlight
in. And she let the sunlight into that little thing that reinvigorated him. So this whole thing is Moira McTaggart's fault.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, it could have all been avoided if she was.
If she had.
Moira McTaggart's a mutant, too.
And you know why? It's because, Xavier took her memories. She probably would not have ended up in the same place hunting down mutants if she hadn't been.
Just stayed with
if
Xavier.
If she had known Xavier was a mutant and done all that stuff.
She was actually just like hunting down like cultists as a CIA.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, one could argue that if Xavier had let her.
She might have retired and just had Xavier
babies.
Yeah,
it probably would have changed where she was at that exact moment.
I'm okay with blaming Xavier for this.
I did not even catch that pull.
It's all her fault because she's the one that uncovers that rug, remember? Mm-hmm. That lets the sunlight in, that touches the tip of the.
It wasn't a rug, though. It was like. Fucking it
no!
Was
remember,
because like,
she asked like, no, "Can I buy this rug?" Remember?
But no! I meant like she lifts. Oh, I guess that's she lifts planks. That's what I was thinking.
The rug was covering the planks that were covering the hole to Apocalypse's chamber thingy. So it's all her fault, and by extrapolation, it's because Xavier mind wiped her. So by extension, kind of Xavier's fault. So maybe.
I think a lot of things are actually Xavier's fault in the end.
I know, right?
He's like the Tony Stark of this universe. Like, everything is kind of his fault.
Yeah. You can always draw a line of blame back to him.
Yeah.
How do you like that Mary Sue moment, like, at the very end, where they're just like, oh, let's just rebuild we'll rebuild the mansion
Magneto,
it's a danger room, though.
Magneto and Jean rebuilding the mansion?
Yeah.
No, but I love the danger room. They have
that was pretty
danger
cool.
Room.
That was kind of cool.
I love the cameo of the danger room. That was
actually awesome. Awesome. They had the Sentinels in there.
Yeah, that was
pretty cool.
They got
and the training against them. That was pretty awesome. I liked that you were talking about Magneto using the. I liked the kind of science of him tapping into the magnetic field lines of the Earth, like using the like the actual planet itself to rip out the metal.
Yeah,
I thought that was pretty cool. That made sense to me. That like looked cool, and it was also it made logical sense.
Well, it also makes sense that like later on he's not as powerful as mm-hmm. that because he was using. Apocalypse as a conduit.
Yeah, and you know what? It made sense as a plan. It's like, hey, Apocalypse, like, hey, I'm gonna use Magneto to tear down the culture. I'm gonna have Psylocke and Storm be my like protectors to ward off everybody else. And have Archangel be my personal guard, dude, my angel. Like he had like a plan. It was like organized.
Actually, like visually, I loved that Magneto's power because like had like the actual like pole wave shape.
Yeah, it was the magnetic field lines.
Was, looking at that was like
the
was
the
amazing.
Debris was tracing the magnetic fields of the Earth. That was really like well thought out.
Like for me, visually, I think that was the best part.
It was very well executed. What do you think about Storm and Psylocke? So we had Olivia Munn.
Both.
We had Olivia Munn looking like Olivia Munn.
I love a Mohawk Storm.
Yeah, Mohawk Storm. All about Mohawk Storm. I like how she got her white hair because of Apocalypse when he was transforming
her. That was a cool little touch.
Yeah. That was cool.
And then I thought I was a little surprised Olivia Munn didn't have more to do. That was actually what was surprising because she was so heavily hyped.
Yeah, she was really hyped, and
she has cool moments. She has like the cool flip and like do the sword cross.
Yeah, and then
we got to cut out Asians out of films. That's what
do
we got to
do. Olivia Munn.
Yeah, she's half Asian.
I know she's half Asian, but it's like a Tiger Woods situation.
Yeah,
I've heard that
she's ours.
I've read and heard that she's going to be playing a bigger part in movies down the line. So Psylocke's going to be.
It's probably because she's not that expensive to
get. I liked her ties to.
That's absolutely true, and she's not a very good actress yet.
Well, and it's kind of like the Elizabeth Olsen of Scarlet Witch will be a bigger actress in the Marvel series because she's kind of cheap to get.
Olivia Munn is also like dedicated. Like she knew about Psylocke all before.
Yeah. Well, she's a nerd.
She's a total nerd, and she trained really hard for. Remember the video online with Ryan Reynolds?
Yeah, where she's doing
her
like
training,
the sword fighting, and stuff.
Yeah, so she's in it to win it for that. And she looks visually fitting the character right on.
I love like the costume. Like they actually got it. Like
it was the costume.
It was the costume.
I like the fact they.
Were you guys looking for camel toe in that costume? By the way.
I like the fact they had Storm be kind of a roguish type in the beginning, come from like the streets of Cairo.
Was cool.
That was cool. I like that the origin of her.
Again, how would she join Team X-Men if Apocalypse never happened?
Destiny. Destinies.
Well, some like
that's a tenuous pull coming from you,
Doctor Who, man.
I'm willing to go, but see, that's how good timeline. this movie was that I'm willing to suspend my disbelief and I'm willing.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
But you of all people should respect the inevitability of certain time streams in Doctor Who, right?
Easy pulling out the DW.
I know, right? Well,
the D-dub.
D-dub.
You got to have your continuity between, you know, your timeline respect.
Listen, you and your bootstrap paradox can just go ahead and
go fuck yourself.
What about
pull yourself up is what I was going to say. You absolute barbarian.
I want to address just like the awesomeness of Nightcrawler scenes too. He did a really good job fighting.
I dug
the Nightcrawler. I've always been a huge Nightcrawler fan since I was a little kid.
I've never been a Nightcrawler guy.
I like him because like he's an underdog. You don't see him coming. I mean, literally, you don't see him coming. But like you also, he's very humble and reverent. What's the word? Reverential. Reverent. And I like that about his personality. Even though he's vicious and terrifying in countenance and power.
Right.
He is.
Isn't he Mystique's son?
And there sometimes. Is.
Sometimes. Depending on who's writing at that moment.
Sometimes he's also experiment by Mr. Sinister. Other times.
Speaking.
I wonder if they're going to make a reference that Beast and Mystique fucked, and that's their kid.
Because he's blue.
Fucked. Yeah. Fucked. They're all blue.
Because he's blue.
Because he's blue.
Yeah. Come on. Why is it gotta be a skin thing?
Why do you gotta make it about?
Make it about color? Because they're all the same color, and I don't know too many fucking blue people.
Remember that scene where he was all being proud? He's like, aren't you normally blue? And he's like, yeah, I retired that, and he's like, I'm blue. That was great. That was awesome.
He had a lot of very good quippy moments.
Some good lines.
Or like when he passes out, and then after the big battle, he's like, hold on,
what did I miss?
It was good. It was good.
What about the Havoc Cyclops thing? So we've traded off Havoc for Cyclops now.
I'm fine with it.
I don't think anybody really like me being a casual
who loved Havoc
visual.
Because we already have tortured Scott already.
Yeah.
It's one movie into the new Scott Summers, and he's already the tortured asshole.
You know what I would like is
His brother.
I hope they bring multiple men in. That's the one I want.
Cool.
Who's Multiple Man?
He was in X-Men 3.
Yeah.
I remember it, X-Men 3.
Essentially, his power is to create multiples of himself.
Yeah.
He makes himself many, many times.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about who were we missing, because we didn't have Rogue or Gambit yet. We're going to get a Gambit movie.
We're going to get a Channing Tatum Gambit.
I'm okay with that.
That actually fits. He has that sort of like... Monsieur.
Yeah. And so are we going to get a Rogue paired in with that? Are we going to get a Rogue origin story coming in there?
I'm tired of
it. Is Anna Paquin going to suck her way back in?
I don't want Anna Paquin as
fucking...
Dude,
this... No, she's done.
I don't want Anna Paquin as anything. I want Anna Paquin as like a non-existence.
I
don't like an Anna
Paquin. She sleezed her way into a cameo at the end of Days of Future Past, too.
Well, I mean, that's...
Well, or if you watch the uncut version, she actually plays a very prominent part in the uncut.
Oh, she's in the... she's the one that takes over Kitty Pryde's powers. Yeah.
So
we missed Iceman, but Iceman in the continuity now in the timeline isn't born yet. He's young, I think.
Yeah. Right.
Because Bobby Drake is rather young.
Because he's
a kid in X-Men.
Less than Patrick Stewart aged.
Yeah.
Well, he's still in... he's in high school in X2.
Yeah. Because
that's when they first meet, and he gives her like the rose made of ice.
Exactly. So Rogue, Bobby Drake, Kitty Pryde... are all not born yet, but
Colossus.
But Colossus is all not here yet. Although he's in Deadpool, so.
But Deadpool's current timeline, so we're okay with that.
But then Jubilee is in there, so she's going to be a lot older than the original timeline.
I thought the actress was cute.
She was cute.
Nah.
Okay. And then so we get
more for me.
We get the stinger at the end. We get the Essex Corp.
And nobody at this table knew.
It's Mr. Sinister. So here was, I went back and I looked at it. I thought Mr. Sinister's name was Nathaniel Courier, but Courier was the guy he stole his regenerative powers from. It's Nathaniel Essex, who was born in Victorian England, who Apocalypse touched with his power. He already had a regenerative power, and then he goes about stealing the powers of other mutants. He's a kind of a eugenicist mutant.
He's Siler.
Yeah, basically.
I assumed it was Mr. Sinister when I saw the thing, but I'm like, I don't know the reference.
And if we got Mr. Sinister, that means we'll probably get a Cable crossover at some point.
Cable's supposed to be in Deadpool.
And Cable's going to be in Deadpool. So they're thinking ahead. They're synergizing. I like this.
And
table is Scott Summers and
Scott
Jean,
and Jean's
Scott
son,
and Jean's
right?
Future,
who comes back, and he's older than both of them when he comes back.
Yep. Like, much
and
older.
Then, but he actually ends up hanging out with Deadpool a lot more.
Who,
him and Deadpool are buddies, kind of.
Who's, the guy who plays Hellboy?
Ron Perlman.
Yeah, he should be Cable.
I can see that, yeah.
Ron Perlman, Cable.
Oh, wow. Cable's not that much of a Neanderthal. Ron Perlman straight up looks like a Neanderthal. With
but Ron Perlman can play smart.
I've always seen Cable as, like, pretty fucking huge.
Yeah, he's always yoked.
I think he's got the look, and I think Ron Perlman can
play. That's because of the 90s, because everybody was yoked in the 90s in comic books.
That was the thing. So is the next movie going to be a 90s trip?
Yeah.
Of course it is.
It's got to be.
And then I'm pretty sure they're going to incorporate animated.
They're going to have Morph.
Oh, if they have Morph.
This one's for you, Morph.
Who's Morph?
Morph was from the X-Men animated series.
The first episode, he's
died. The first episode, he gets captured. He doesn't die. Oh, he gets captured. And then, like, three seasons later, they do a story arc where he didn't die, and they actually
break
him out.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he turns into a bad guy because he's working with Mr. Sinister.
Also, the Morlocks, Caliban, they had them go after the underground information informant. They had Caliban in there. So they've got that whole underworld brewing of the Morlocks.
Yeah, they have some deep cuts in this one.
Yeah, so they planted a lot of seeds. I'm looking forward to seeing how they grow in the next few films here. So the question is Bryan Singer going to keep going with this?
Is this
the end of his trilogy, or is he going to keep going?
I like him. Well, he didn't do First Class.
That's right.
That was Matt Vaughn.
Well,
that
I hope he
good.
Keeps going.
Well, but Matt Vaughn right now is doing Kingsman 2, which I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, who I'm just got really cast in that? I just saw a thing.
Fucking the dude.
The recent Oscar winner from Big Lebowski.
He won an Oscar?
Yeah, he won an Oscar for something.
Jeff Bridges,
yeah.
He won an Oscar?
Yeah, he won an Oscar for something.
Not that I remember.
True Grit.
I think it might have been.
That was a couple of years
ago.
That
was several years ago now.
He won an Oscar for something. Anyway, but
he's going to be in Kingsman 2.
That's going to be awesome.
I'm kind of looking forward to it because the first one was fun.
Yeah.
Oh, the first one was amazing.
It was great.
It was, again, simple and fun.
That's
all I want out of these types of movies.
And here's the next part I think that's really fun about this movie. Guess who they're bringing back?
Samuel Jackson?
Nope.
Who? From what? What movie?
Colin Firth.
Oh. Oh, I thought you were talking about X-Men.
Oh, no. Sorry. For Kingsman. They're bringing him back.
You know what else?
For some reason.
Well, go ahead and do it. He's good.
At the same time, it's like, this movie is so fucking off the walls that go ahead and do it.
Yeah, you can go with it.
But you're saying, like, keep it simple? You know the acronym, keep it simple, stupid?
Yeah.
You know what Mystique was wearing? She was wearing a KISS t-shirt.
Oh.
Underneath her 80s jacket the whole time. So, apparently, the acronym. God, the fashion was awesome.
I just like the fact that it's not a complex movie for the sake of being complex. Because there is definitely a version of this movie they could have made overly complex and ridiculous. And they just were like, no, we're just going to be simple and an ABC kind of story.
Yeah, and everybody gets to play their part. Everybody gets to have their moment to shine. It all works together to form a whole that's
right.
cohesive and understandable.
It doesn't have to be complex.
A review I heard about this movie is that they called it soulless. I was like...
Are you kidding?
No,
I feel like there was a lot of like,
with spirit.
Yeah, there was some feeling,
and there
this.
Was a lot of joy in it. Yeah. Like, it was a fun movie.
It was fun to watch, and there were some good hard hitting moments, like the Michael Fassbender scene was good.
Yeah.
Xavier and Jean was good.
There were a lot of bad moments too. Though.
See,
of bad moments, like a fucking steel beam coming down, another one coming and making an X.
That was awesome.
That was pretty bad.
Was terrible. It was awful.
Awesome. I rolled my eyes.
I liked it.
I liked it
because I was like, you know what?
It's a comic.
Declaring a side.
Got to remember, it's a comic. It's based on a comic. It's supposed to be fun and cheesy.
But remember, we could do comic and still be awesome.
Grounded.
Yeah, AKA
Maybe
Dark Knight.
Maybe well then, but like for me, like. And the film is like, oh, okay, I see what you're doing.
X-Men, yeah.
But it was cute. I didn't say, that's cute. I was like, that's cute. was my reaction.
I agree with Steven on this one. Man, this is the most in sync we've been in for anything.
I know,
forever.
You and me don't agree on
We usually don't
mostly.
Agree. Wow. Well, is there anything else you wanted to say about this film before we wrap it up for today?
I'm still sad that Jubilee didn't have a bigger part.
Me too.
No fireworks. I know.
She has always been my favorite X-Men.
Like, Jubilee?
I loved her. She was the fun 80s kid I couldn't be because I wasn't born yet. She had plasma fireworks. That's everything
that's pretty
I
cool.
could ever want.
And the sad part for the actress is like all of her scenes, and apparently she had a much bigger role that just got ended up on the cutting floor. But the sad part for this actress is that like she was just relegated to like surprised face, sad faced, happy face, and like resigned face.
Yeah.
That was like that was all she got. She was like, huh.
They put a lot of effort, I feel, into actually like characterizing her, but well, she didn't really do anything.
And wasn't she like from San Diego too?
The yeah, something like
the
that.
The actress who played her? Oh, yeah. Wow. She's hometown girl.
Ours? Right. No. Wait, what? Like, or are you thinking about the lady who's... there's a chick who's in the new Empire. Not Empire. New Star Wars.
Oh, maybe that's what I'm thinking.
She's
of.
From San Diego.
Okay.
She went to, well, kind of my high school.
kind of
brag,
but not my actually my high school is actually another one that
you got
takes
out of
that takes people from my high school.
I liked how they carted out the blob when they were cage fighting.
That was cool.
That was actually a fun camp
cage fighting.
The, that was the blob.
Yeah,
that big fat guy. They
I didn't even like catch that.
The angel took out the blob before they forced Nightcrawler in there.
I didn't catch that. I just was like, fat man.
That was a good fight. The Angel versus Nightcrawler fight. I like that. That was fun.
I like that he drags him against the cage and burns his wings, and that's why he can't fly anymore. Metal wings.
That was pretty bad.
That was dope.
One thing I was curious about, the field that prevents them from using their powers.
That felt like
there was a little bit of plotty, and that was Stryker's thing. Two possible ways they could go with that. Genosha. They could use the Genosha plot line where they have the island and they use that field to control the mutants. Also. When Magneto was doing his whole magnetic field power thing, and now he's going off, him and Xavier split again. Asteroid M, possible plotline. Now he knows he can do that shit, use that kind of power.
Is Asteroid M the
it's
one
when he makes the
continent in the outer space? Is that the one where also Cyclops ends up betraying the X-Men and going with him?
I thought that was when he joins up with Star whatever his dad. His
well,
because
I don't know if you remember the 90s comic book Fatal Attractions, the storyline.
I didn't remember that one.
It's the one with where all the X-Men books had like a kind of a big crossover.
Okay.
And they all had holograms on the cover.
Okay.
And essentially
which ones didn't?
Well, it was they were
90s
collectors.
Was the era of
in the
holograms.
It was the fancy like holograms like this is like the technology of the era.
Watch
by the way, this is collectible. I don't know if you know this, but this is a collectible comic.
Well, and essentially it's that he builds a floating island in space and he creates Genosha for mutants, essentially.
Yeah.
And this separatist colony, it's after
are we pulling in Star Wars?
No.
Genosis is...
No, Genosha.
I know, but Genosis...
Not Geonosis. Similar.
...is a separatist planet in Star Wars.
But this came first.
Yeah. This is in the 90s.
So
then, like, Colossus's sister dies of, because there's also like a disease that's killing mutants. It attacks.
Oh, is that the one that Cable comes back in time to fight?
I don't know. That was.
How many times does he come back in time?
Too many.
As many times
as many times as he's needed. He's a time traveler. He can go as many times as he wants.
Yeah.
And then in his grief, Colossus ends up joining up with Magneto and
Cyclops or Colossus?
Colossus. Okay. Colossus joins up with Magneto when his sister dies.
Okay.
And then they go and fight the X-Men.
Okay.
It's actually pretty dope. It's a dope storyline.
That's an interesting storyline.
And that's also the one where the first time that Wolverine loses his adamantium.
Oh shit. Yeah.
It's the storyline where he actually strikes like almost a fatal blow on Magneto. And in rage, Magneto rips the adamantium from his bones. It comes out of him.
Oh,
and then
I remember hearing about the plot line.
And then Professor X, who happens to be there in some type of walking suit, basically kind of says no more and fries Magneto's brain and turns him into a vegetable. He just wipes his brain. He's like, "You're done.
Oh, what?
Like, I'm never letting you hurt anybody again."
Oh,
and just
awesome.
Turns.
Is this like the Batman Joker moment where he's just like?
No, you're nope. fucking done.
Right, yeah. Cracks his neck. Crack. Yeah, it's the same type of thing where he's like, no more. Like,
wow.
And the last scene of Magneto is, and Colossus even after that still says like, I kind of agree with Magneto more than you, and stays on the island and nurses a vegetable Magneto back to health. Kind
That's
of
awesome.
Yeah, it's an awesome storyline.
Is that main canon though?
Yeah.
What about the Onslaught storyline where Magneto and Xavier fuse?
Yeah, that was a weird one.
That was a weird one.
Yeah, that was that was not a great storyline. No.
I think Genosha or Asteroid M would be a plausible one to continue in the 90s.
I mean, Onslaught, I guess the entity was a cool idea, but it wasn't really a storyline.
But as far as plausibility, but we'll see what happens because we've got the Gambit movie coming up. We've got a Deadpool sequel with Cable going to be in it, so we'll see how they wrap it all together.
So here's a question I want to like pose to everyone that kind of like I want to punctuate this last movie. Is Fox back in the game?
Well, they got this one. They nailed this one. Like, I mean, if they can keep it up,
because right now the critics are still saying it's a bad movie. But do we think Fox is back in the game?
If you look at the user ratings, it's like 94%.
Really?
Yeah, it's high. It's the critics that are bad mouthing about it. Most of the fan reviews are awesome.
Like, sell reviews, and bad reviews sell better than good reviews.
Yeah,
right. What do you think, Keith?
I think it's too early to tell. I'm still burned by the original X-Men trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm waiting to see like what happens next.
Well, I mean, they made that huge misstep with Fantastic Four, and then Deadpool was a good step in the right direction, and I personally think that this was strong. It was incredibly strong.
They're going to have the
Old Man Logan storyline for the next Wolverine movie. So we'll see. They cash out Wolverine's chips. We'll see how they do. But there's lots to look forward to. So we'll definitely be watching the rise of Fox and X-Men, see if they can keep it up. But we're all X-Men fans here, so we'll definitely keep you informed on any X news related. And until next time,
check out nerdfunnel.com.
Oh, yeah. Nerdfunnel.com, facebook.com/nerdfunnel, youtube.com/nerdfunnel. Hit us up, watch the LPs, write us comments, read the articles, and keep listening. And until next time, you've been Nerdfuddled.
And go hug a mutant.